listeners, welcome to Film Club episode 28. We've been away for a little while, but don't worry because we are back, and we are back with a pretty classic cult comedy for you. If you are unaware, this episode is all about the 1984 Rob Reiner classic, which you, yes you dear listeners, picked for our People's Choice. We are of course talking about This Is Spinal Tap. I am Mal Foster, joined as always by my co-host and co-cinephile in the making and the magic and all the good cinema stuff, Mr. Dan Seraph.
Hey Mal, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. If we did this last week, I would have sounded a lot gruffer and a lot more snuffly because I was full of cold.
Oh, so it's a good thing that we left it for a week.
It is, yeah. It's a good thing we've delayed it because now you'll be able to understand at least 50% of what I'm talking about. So this is Spinal Tap. This is the latest pick from our public pick. So, excellent choice. I'm going to throw it out there. Excellent choice, listeners. What a wonderful film to pick. I've seen this film a number of times, many, many times over the years. But it is always an absolute joy to come back to it. And it's been a while since I've seen it. So it was a really nice sort of refresher to come back to it. And as I have done many times in the past, I had a lot of fun with this film and a lot of laughs. What about you, Dan?
Yeah, me too. I've seen this film quite a few times now too, and it never fails to make me laugh so much. And you know what? It's such a intelligent and groundbreaking film. Like, because so many films have kind of stole the ideas from it, mm-hmm. and like the kind of concept of it. Like, it kind of deadens actually how innovative it was. But I mean, it's just such a funny, such a witty, and such a smart film.
Because I was thinking about this, is this the first example of a quote-unquote mockumentary style? Because I can't think of anything that came before it that did it in that particular fashion.
I think it might be. The only one I can think of that came out around that time was the Woody Allen one, Zelig, but I think even that was a few years later. I think this probably was like the film that kind of kickstarted that kind of mockumentary thing.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you look at that style, and granted, it's been done so many times now, but you can look at how many good products have come of that. I mean, a lot of Christopher Guest's work has kind of been based off that, all of which are fantastic, and I do love Christopher Guest's work in general, but I do kind of still think this is his sort of high watermark for it. But I mean, you look at all sorts of stuff. You could basically say that found footage kind of found a way in because of that style. Stuff like The Office, which basically took that idea. It's kind of really, it's a very simple idea, but it's one that really works fantastically well, especially for the subject of this film, which is just ridiculous rock stars. And I mean, straight away from like the opening of the film, the level of ridiculousness gets taken straight through the sky when you see them first on stage in their costumes with that crazy 80s hair and just the actual songs that they're singing. It just wastes no time in going, yep, this is the tone of the film. Either you're with it and you're going to run with it and enjoy it, or you're going to be really put off by it. But, you know, I think there's a brave thing to do, but it works fantastically well. And instantly you just get an idea of just how ridiculous, yet brilliantly fun the film is.
Yeah, it takes like a moment in like music history, which I think most people will probably be able to look back on now and be like, oh, it wasn't maybe the proudest moment of music. And it just kind of like, it takes it apart so well and just dials like to like, to, I guess to use a metaphor from the film, like it just turns it like, it turns like the dial up to 11 on its ridiculous and its stupidity and its silliness. And it's like, it's so good at doing that. I mean, it captures that like that era of like glam rock hair metal music so well. Like, even looking back at it today, like, it's so authentic in what it does, and that's part of the genius of the film, I thought.
I think the genius of it as well is the timing in it, because it came out 84, when you're pretty much in the midst of when music like that was actually taken really quite serious, and was actually kind of like a moving phenomenon. Like, hair metal was in its full throes by the mid-80s, and the way it just kind of really, it's such a wonderfully sharp satirical prod at that sort of genre in particular. But I also think it's a really fantastic sort of prod at the music industry as a whole. One of the scenes that I think, which kind of gets overlooked a little bit, but I think is fantastic, at just the way it kind of pokes fun at the sort of diva-ish aspects of the music industry is when Nigel's complaining about how small the bits of bread are and how he's having such a hard time, and he's actually getting quite upset and getting strawberry over the fact that the meat doesn't fit the size of the bread. And it's so stupid and it's so ridiculous, but it's just got such a bite to it, and it just fits in perfectly. And it's like, you know what? It really wouldn't surprise me if something like this has actually happened within the industry, within a band, someone getting really upset over small bread.
Oh, totally. Like, you always hear of, like, green room, like, backstage stories of people that, like, was it, like, Guns N' Roses? Like, Axl Rose, like, used to demand, like, a watermelon, like, a giant watermelon, like, at every show that he went to. And, like, even then, like, Guns N' Roses are sort of part of that era. And it's just, like, it totally adds to, like, how, I mean, it is ridiculous, but it is so, like, right in everything it depicts. But what you said is, like, it is totally off the era as well, and it really did kind of make fun of like a part of music, a genre of music that was taken very seriously at the time. And I think that's what's really cool about it, because you can kind of take the idea of Spinal Tap, and I think you could probably tell this kind of story with like every generation of music fans. You know, you could like you could have done this like 10 years ago with like the emo movement or something. You could do it now with like the Justin Bieber like One Direction thing, and it would still be like, you know, it'd be the same kind of thing. And that's kind of what's so cool about it, that it just did capture that moment and just made fun of it so well.
It's got a real kind of universal appeal in that sense, because
Yeah, and timeless too, yeah.
Because, well, that's a really good word, timeless, because it does encapture that era, but there's so many things which kind of, you know, really do resonate throughout the whole industry and throughout showbiz, essentially, not just music, but kind of like the entertainment industry, and just how sort of sensitive and fragile and how egotistic a lot of them are, and just some of the ridiculous notions of how people behave in it. One thing that's really kind of that I kind of have noticed in the past, but something that I suppose kind of shone through a little bit more this time, is just how much great physical comedy there is in it. Whether it be Stonehenge with that tiny little model, or Derek's cucumber at airport security, there's just loads of great little moments. Even little moments like when David's wearing his space jumper that Janine's given him, and he's embarrassed to wear it in front of the others, and he's like, "I'll just take it off now. I'll just take it off because they're playing a game in the back." And it's just little things like that, and it's just the attention to detail in it is fantastic. And I think that it packs in so much in such a short time, and the running length is absolutely perfect, I think, for this film. It's like, what, an hour and 15 minutes roughly? And I think you get just enough in without having it feel like the joke's gone on too long. And it's just utterly consistent. I think it's one of the most consistently funny films I've ever seen, because if you were to do like a laugh per minute ratio, you'd have a really high result with this film.
I think I was reading before, and I didn't actually know this, but apparently there's like a 4.5 hour version of Spinal Tap, because most of it's kind of ad-libbed and just kind of done in kind of improv style by the three comedians at the center of it and the people around them. And so, like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of perfect that they've just been able to kind of cut it down to what, like 75, 80 minutes, and just encapsulate everything that's like the highlights of it just into this perfect little package. And it never really, like, it never runs its course, also, I think, because it's got such a big heart to the story. And, you know, as much as it is kind of a satire of the music scene, and as much as it does kind of laugh at, like, the hair metal glam rock thing, you know, this is a band that you kind of root for, because they are the underdogs. You know, they're bettered by other bands, and promoters are pulling out, and things are just constantly going wrong for them. And they're stupid and they're talentless, but they're super charming as well. And so you're kind of invested in it as well. It's not just like a music industry satire, and I think that's kind of what makes it so watchable.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that very much so. Especially that there's a sense of friendship amongst the band that is really quite appealing and quite charming. In particular, with like the two leads, Nigel and David, who fall out, and you know, it's that tired old cliche, lead singer's girlfriend kind of throws a spanner in the works. But it
Yeah,
doesn't
it's
really.
totally like it's a total like homoerotic romance, and that's so good about it.
Exactly, but I mean, it gives you just enough backstory, and it gives you enough on-screen time and chemistry between them. And there's great chemistry with everybody in the film, but particularly those two, that you do actually end up caring about them. And when Nigel sort of goes his separate ways, and he's watching from the side stage, you're like, oh, just even though you know he's gonna go on. If you've seen it before, you do. You're kind of like, oh, just go on, because that's where you belong. You know it. You know you're all idiots, but you all belong to be together as idiots.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite songs from the film?
Sex Farm, I
Because
think.
I which one? Sorry, Sex Farm.
Yeah, simply because it's such a ridiculous concept, and the timing. And this is the thing. So many people have said over time and time that, you know, the key to comedy is timing, and there's so many good moments of timing within Spinal Tap, and Sex Farm is one of them, because you've got I can't remember who the actor is, but I know he played the commentator in Best in Show, for the dog show. He is like the air base commander, and he's introducing the band when they get to play the air base, and he's like, oh yeah, Take it easy weekend, where we've all let our hair down, and he's making corny dad jokes. And then he's like, oh, okay, guys, so you've got about half an hour, and remember, if you could throw in a few slow songs so I can have a dance too. And then it just goes straight into Sex Farm, and it's like just absolute genius in the sheer timing of it. It's like, wow, that's the kind of slow song that they're playing. And it's such a ridiculous concept. It's talking about getting out his pitchfork to poke your bale of hay. And
This, I'm trying to remember what line it is that absolutely killed me. It's something like, "Let me plow your bean field" or
yeah,
something. It's so funny.
it's so ridiculous with the euphemisms, but it just works. And the fact it's delivered with such a straight face as well, it's amazing. What's fantastic about this film is that people genuinely believed Spinal Tap were a real band for a long time.
But that's how authentic it is, I think. And I mean, they have played shows together, right? I'm sure I saw them at Glastonbury a few years ago,
Well, yeah, because
which is amazing.
I'm sure they put all the music together themselves. And it was like a group effort between Harry Shears, Christopher Guest, and the other dude, whose name escapes me now. But I think they've been working.
Michael McKean?
Yes, that's the one. I'm sure they've been working on it for a long time. And it kind of became its own thing. But yeah. It does have a real sense of authenticity, and not just because of the chemistry and because they work really well together, but because it really does kind of encapsulate it. Because you think back at that time, there was really ridiculous music like that going on, and it kind of feels like, actually, yeah, this probably could work in real life
Yeah,
to a
it could.
degree.
And the songs kind of take a life of their own, like outside of the film as well. Like, I mean, it's not just that, the songs aren't just kind of a throwaway thing, like thrown in here and there. The music is quite an important part of the film.
Oh
You can
yeah.
tell there has been some kind of love and care put into the music. And that's one of the cool things about the film. You can tell that, okay, they are kind of taking the piss out of the music industry, but there is an obviously an obvious love of music here. And the songs, although they are completely daft, aren't entirely that bad. You
No,
can tell that they've actually
they're
kind of
pretty
put a lot of
decent.
effort into them. They're pretty catchy, right? So yeah, I think they kind of take a life of their own, and it doesn't surprise me that they kind of have, gone on to perform shows, and the songs are still so popular.
Is there any particular songs that are favourites of yours?
We were just talking about like perfect timing. And I think it's not some song in the movie as other ones, but I love the moment. It's probably one of my favorite moments in the film, when Christopher Guest is playing that kind of Bach Mozart piece on the piano. It's a really beautiful piece of music. And Rob Reiner, can't remember what his name is in the film, Marty
Marty
did bit.
DeBergy, I think it is.
Yeah. And Serrano goes, "Oh, so what's it called?" And Christopher Guest just like with perfect timing just goes, "It's called Lick My Love Pump." I love that.
It works so fantastically well because, as you say, it's such a beautiful piece of music. It's really pretty, and it's in, as he says, the saddest key of all time, D minor, which just makes people weep. And it's like, oh, this is actually quite tender and touching. And then he comes out with that title, and it's like, yeah, of course, because it couldn't be called anything else, could it?
That and I think it's called Big Bottom is
Yeah.
pretty great too. If only because it rhymes Monday with Bunday, which I think is genius.
And it has the immortal line, talk about mud flaps, Michael's got 'em. I mean, what else could you possibly want? It's just been such a fun experience going back to it, and it's, as I said, it's been a while since I've seen it, and it still remains just as fresh and just as funny and just as relevant as before. Where do you think? Do you think this is? Because I've said it, and I do generally feel it's true. I mean, I do love a lot of Christopher Guest's work. In fact, the majority of his work. I mean, he's just a really funny writer, and his work with like Eugene Levy in the last like 10 years or so has been fantastic as well. But I do think this is still his high watermark, and I do think that it will be very hard if he ever does manage to surpass it in terms of his writing contribution.
I actually don't think I've seen anything else by Christopher Guest, which is kind of shameful.
You've not?
Yeah. I know Best in Show. You've talked about Best in Show quite a lot, and I really want to see that.
I think you'd love that, because it's all about dogs.
And I would love that, yeah.
I think you'd really like it, because it's about dogs, and it's about their eccentric owners. And it kind of does what Spinal Tap does for music to just pet owners in general. And pageantry and stuff.
It sounds great, and I do need to check it out. I know he's had he had that show as well, Family Tree, which was on HBO as well pretty recently, which I wanted to watch. But you know, I just haven't seen anything else by Christopher Guest. But on the basis of Spinal Tap, if I had to make a kind of I guess a judgment, like, it seems like it'd be a hard thing to top, because it's one of the great comedy movies. Like, I guess there's this kind of like preconception that comedy isn't as easy to do. Isn't as hard to do. It's like a hard, like, hitting, harrowing drama, but like the level of detail that's gone into this, and the passion, and how intelligent and how smart and how witty it is, and just its ability to capture like a moment in time, like, it's as good as like any drama out there. It's a classic. It really is. So I can't imagine him being able to top it, as great as I'm sure his other work is. It just feels like this is a classic.
The film is pretty infamous for its quotes, and it really kind of has seeped its way and stuck in pop culture for ever since its release, really. You know, it's kind of, it may not be at the forefront, but it's always kind of reserved a place in sort of pop culture lexicon. But I was wondering, is there any particular favourite quotes that you've got from the film? Because there are so, so many.
Yeah, this seems like an impossible thing to answer. I mean, where do you start? I don't think you could pick out one, because this, by the time one's gone, there's another one that's around that's just twice as good, as good or twice as good. So it's so hard to pick out a line.
There's a bunch of infamous ones, like it goes up to 11 or non.
What would yours be?
Well, watching it again, I picked out some ones that I kind of never really didn't resonate as much. I suppose because I kind of had in the forefront of my mind to expect some of the more noticeable ones that perhaps my ears were tuned into, sort of like the background sort of aspect of it. So I picked out a couple of ones that maybe have slid past people's attention. But when Janine is going through her Zodiac costume thing with the band, and she's talking about how the keyboard player, who I'm putting my nose, the keyboard player, every time you see him, he always looks absolutely demented. Like, he's,
he does, yeah.
He's screaming to the song Out of Time, or he's just staring at it, at the camera, like he's about to try and eat it. But when Janine is going through her Zodiac costume thing, and he's the yin and yang thing, and then you've got Nigel, who's like the goat, which looks like a Satan's goat. And then you've got Derek, who's like this fish crustacean thing. And David passes him the piece of paper, and it's such a simple line, but he says, oh, here it is, this is your crab face. And I was just like... That's such a wonderful piece of just random lines. Another one was Dennis, when he's arguing with Janine over their little power struggle, and he says something along the lines, I'm just paraphrasing, I don't have to listen to anybody, especially someone who looks like an Australian's nightmare, which makes no sense, and there's no content for it. But it's like, okay, I'll go with that, and it just made me laugh quite a lot. Just how random it was.
There's two, I guess. that have stood out. And I guess, it's because I've seen the film so many times that I know all the classic quotes. But I do like Nigel's delivery of... it's when it's, early on when they're talking about their first drummer. Or was it the second drummer who choked on someone else's vomit? And he just, like, in this really deadpan way, it's just like, yeah, because you can't dust for vomit, which I think is great. But there's a whole... the whole thing after Stonehenge, I think, is great when he's like, I don't think the problem was that we weren't on form. I think the problem might have been that there was a monument on stage that was in danger of being crushed by a dwarf, which is a great line.
Oh,
but there's so many. I mean,
it's such a great scene as well. Again, just another sense of the physical comedy in it as well. The stage props, I think, that is just a little piece of the film, but I think it's a really funny part because you've got the ridiculousness of Stonehenge as a concept for a song to begin with, but with the druids and the actual structure. And also there's a scene with the pod where Derek can't get out of the pod.
Oh, yeah. And that's probably some of the best physical comedy in the film, actually. I think Harry Shears nails that.
Just as soon as their pods are closing, he opens and he's like, yeah! And then gets his hand stuck in it again.
It's the moment when he turns around and realises that everybody's gone back in. And after all that effort, like the whole song trying to get out, he has to go back.
There's a dude with the hammer and the blowtorch. another line that kind of surpassed me in the past but stuck out was when they've been asked about the fact that just a lot of young boys go to their gigs. And they're like, oh yeah, well, you know, I think it's a sexual thing. I think a lot of women are frightened by our sexual energy on stage. And Nigel just comes in with a fantastic line of, yeah, because we've got armadillos in our trousers.
Yeah, I love that line.
So many good lines, so many quotable stuff, so many, just, for a film that is literally just like 80 minutes long, it packs in so many memorable things, and that is a real achievement for any film standard, really, to have so many memorable moments and so many quotable parts and bits. And that's what I mean, there's just a real consistency to the film that I think is one of the reasons why it still stands up, like, what is it, in 1984, so that'll be, what, nearly 30 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah, and it still feels so timeless, yeah.
Yeah, and it still feels really fresh and just really enjoyable. And just an absolute blast to just stick on, and, you know, for 80 minutes, you definitely get your money's worth.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. So that is This Is Spinal Tap. That was your latest pick, listeners, and a fantastic one as well. So kudos to you on that. Let us know what you think should be in the mix for our next public pick. Let us know your film suggestions over at screeninvasion.com. Look for the show notes for this Film Club episode 28, or you can get on Twitter and let us know film suggestions and recommendations over at Screen Invasion or Invasion Radio at Twitter. But the next pick falls in the hands of you, Mr. Seraph. It is you up to bat for our next edition into Film Club. And you've had an interesting collection of films that you've picked so far, so I always find myself somewhat intrigued and excited and very, very, very...
frightened after my Lars von Trier choices.
Yeah, the Lars von Trier has shaken me up a little bit, so I always approach these with just a little bit of intrepidation, but I'm excited nonetheless to see what your next...
That's how I want people to feel about my choices.
I want people to be
cautiously excited. You know, I've got a few that I want to choose from here. Okay, Mal, do you want a classic or do you want something a little bit out there?
I'm going to go with something a little bit out there, because that's,
okay, then.
That's me in a nutshell. So, yeah, do that. Something a little bit out there.
All right, then. In that case, I'm going to pick a film that I've never actually seen.
Oh.
But it's just been re-released. At least it has been over here in the UK. It's got a re-release from the Masters of Cinema, which is like quite a... I guess it's like the UK equivalent of the Criterion Collection. It's quite a prestigious kind of film distribution thing. So it's just got re-released, and it's a film that I suppose was always underrated, but now that it's had this re-release, a lot of people have kind of seen it in a new light, and it's kind of been re-evaluated as something of a classic of its era. But I've never seen it, and it's a filmmaker whose work I've not really seen a lot of, to be honest with you. So I thought I'd choose this, and we'll see how it goes. The film I'm going to choose is Blowout. It's the Brian De Palma film from the early 80s with John Travolta, Nancy Allen, John Lithgow. Essentially, kind of the same sort of concept as The Conversation, about a guy working in a movie sound studio who accidentally records, this is according to the IMDb plot description, records the evidence that proves a car crash was accidentally was actually murder, and finds himself in danger. Like I said, I've never seen this film before, but I've heard a lot of people raving about it since it got re-released by Masters of Cinema over here. I don't know if it's had a Blu-ray release in the States too, but yeah. So I thought maybe we'd jump into this film and see what it's like.
I've never even heard of it until just now.
Really?
No.
It's like I said, it's one of those ones that sort of, I think it kind of came out, like, it's 81, it says it came out. I think a lot of people just really didn't respond to it. But it's one of those films that I think people have kind of warmed to over the years. Now that it's had this re-release, like I said, a lot of people have looked back at it and said, actually, it's really, really good. It was quite ahead of its time. So yeah, I'd love to see what it's like. And this is the first time I've chosen a film that I've not seen on film clubs, so that's pretty exciting. So yeah, Blowout, Brian De Palma. Go and try and find a copy of it, and we'll see what it's like.
It's pretty
Go on
good.
an adventure together.
I'm interested to see what early De Palma, well, early-ish De Palma was like, pre-Scarface, pre-Untouchables.
Yeah, I think Scarface and Untouchables and Mission Impossible are probably the only ones I've seen, like the three most popular ones. But yeah, this was right before Scarface, actually, now that I look at it. So it's right at the beginning of that really popular era of his career.
It sounds pretty interesting as well, actually. It's quite an interesting concept. Young John Travolta in there. All right, good choice. I look forward to seeing this. And it'll be interesting because it'll be a film that both of us have not seen before.
Yeah.
And if you haven't, then you are also in for a treat as well. But if you have, then, you know, perhaps you are in for a treat as well. Who knows? So it's up to your perception. So that's Blowout. I'm going to put a link to the IMDb page in the show notes at screeninvasion.com so you can jump on and find out exactly all the details you need for the film and to get yourself a copy. But until then, I guess that's it for this week. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with Blowout.